Good evening. Oh, I need to talk for you to be able to tell. How's this? Can you hear me okay? All right. That seems like a wonderful place to be. I have on more clothes than you guys do. I want to talk about Zazen. I suppose I'd never talk about anything else, but particularly clearly about Zazen and posture. Posture. I change my clothes in the bathroom, and this being a yoga studio, I don't know how familiar you all are. There's a skeleton in the bathroom. I thought about bringing it out here, but it's mounted a little oddly, so I don't know how useful, because it's leaning forward. So it looks like Jimmy Cagney dancing. You ever see Jimmy Cagney dance? At any rate, but the thing is that it's got a curve in its lower back. And I am a missionary for curve, honoring the curve in the lower back. It makes a tremendous, tremendous difference when you sit. If you honor that curve, and it doesn't matter if you're sitting in a chair, on a bench, cross-legged. I'm sitting seiza on a cushion right at the moment, kneeling on a cushion. But honoring that curve, when you sit down, you lean forward, and you push your tailbone up, your hips back, your belly forward, and then you sit up again, keeping that arch in your lower back. And you could go take a look at that skeleton later. So what are we doing here? What is it? What's the point of all this sitting? Just sitting around, silently sitting. There's a wonderful story about it that a friend sent me. It's about the Buddha on 11th Avenue in Oakland. It's 11th Avenue and East 19th Street. And I used to live two blocks from there at East 20th Street and 10th Avenue and East 20th Street. So it's like there's catty corner, one corner of the block and the opposite corner of the block. And in Oakland, there are lots of traffic barriers, but they were made not like in Berkeley. At any rate, they're often just those big clunky cement stands that won't let you pass. But in Oakland, they're often kind of landscaped more with curbs, and they might have some stones and so on. They're better looking, but they serve the same purpose. So a man named Dan Stevenson wrote this, and Trish has a copy. She also has the link if you're interested. She can email you the link so you can look at this, because there are some, I brought one picture, but there are lots of pictures of this Buddha. Okay. Isn't it? There's a picture. He and his wife installed this Buddha in 2009 as an experiment to see if it would change the energy of their corner divide, he calls it, and keep the garbage and mattresses from being dumped there. At that time, they were calling the city a couple times a week to have them remove garbage and mattresses from this traffic barrier thing. And it usually took them a week to pick it up. And, of course, by then, there was even more stuff. And there was also graffiti. And he and another neighbor used to clean it up, but it didn't have a permanent effect. And people were also doing drugs and peeing there and so on. It was pretty disgusting. So apparently he and his wife talked about it, and he decided he went to Ace Hardware, and bought this Buddha statue. Of course, this is Ace Hardware in the East Bay. And then he figured out how to install it so it couldn't be stolen. This being Oakland, he points out. In Vallejo, where I'm from now, we say that things have legs in Vallejo. You have to. So he probably chained it. I don't know. So they installed the Buddha, and the Buddha sat there for several months, and slowly we noticed slight changes in the garbage environment. The garbage and mattresses didn't stop arriving, but the dumping occurred on the other end of the street divide from where the Buddha sat. The Buddha just sat there and never said a word. Within the first year, the graffiti was reduced by half, and the drug and urination problem was lessened as well. And all the Buddha did was sit there. It was well into the second year that someone painted the Buddha a soft, beautiful white, and a short time after that, offerings started to appear. At first, oranges and pears, then flowers and candy, then large flower arrangements and bowls of fruit, and finally incense. For a long time, he says, I didn't see anyone bringing the offerings, they just appeared. Along with all this new activity, the area continued to change, and the illegal dumping all but disappeared. Buddha just sat there, saying not a word. As time passed, the immediate neighbors and extended neighborhood tended to stop and view the Buddha. Whether they were walking their dogs or taking an evening stroll, they would stop and seem to ponder, and many times get into conversations while viewing the Buddha. People talking to each other. The Buddha just continued to sit there, never saying a word. About 2 months ago, a Vietnamese fellow and his wife came to our door and asked if I would mind if he put a little house around the Buddha. And I informed him that I had no issue with that and that he didn't have to seek our permission because the Buddha we installed was the civic Buddha and didn't belong to us but to the community. Since then, people come and pay their respects to Buddha in large numbers throughout the day. They sweep and tend the area every day, and their presence creates a people presence, which in many neighbors' minds makes the neighborhood feel safer. Lou and I are not Buddhists. We installed this Buddha because we felt that he was a neutral being that denotes compassion, brotherhood, and peace. The fact that our experiment has proven more successful than we had ever imagined is a wonderful thing for us and our neighborhood. And to think that this Buddha has just sat there all this time and never said one word. I don't know if he understands what he's saying about that. I have a feeling he probably has some sense of it. Contemplate that. Recently, because of the increased activity around the Buddha, someone called the City Public Works Department to complain about its presence. It was a Monday morning when a neighbor called me and informed me that a public works supervisor was in the neighborhood looking for information about the Buddha, so I came out to see what the problem might be. The supervisor informed me that the Buddha was going to be removed because an anonymous single complaint had been made about it. The supervisor explained that if I could get hold of the people who'd installed it and have them remove the little house and the Buddha statue, then his crew wouldn't have to come out and dismantle it and throw it away. I explained to the supervisor the history of this Buddha, and he said it would still have to be removed. He also informed me that if mattresses and garbage appeared again after the Buddha had been removed, that I had his... I've lived in Oakland. I had his assurance that the city would come out and pick them up. The Buddha just sat there across the street from our conversation and said not a word. It wasn't more than 5 minutes from the time that the supervisor left that I was on my computer asking for help from the neighbors and the community as a whole to help save the Buddha. There's been a remarkable outpouring of letters of heartfelt support asking for the Buddha to remain in his place undisturbed. The Public Works Department, with the input of City Councilwoman Pat Kernighan, halted the dismantling of Buddha in order to, quote, study the situation. This is a step in the correct direction. With all that Oakland needs to do to improve community, just maybe not attempting to dismantle what is working may be a good starting point. For the time being, the Buddha is just sitting there, and he hasn't said a word. So is that why we do this? You know the story about Buddha when his clan was about to be attacked, just sitting there. And the general who was about to do the attacking said, "Why are you sitting there in the blazing sun under a dead tree?" And Buddha said, "Well, for me, it feels like a cool breeze because I'm looking at my native land and it refreshes me." And the general felt bad and he went away. And then later he came back and Buddha sat and watched while his clan was destroyed. And his clan was, I think, not without fault in this. They started it, actually. But he just sat there. And I think at some point he said it actually pained him. And he just sat there. So this Buddha just sat there. Didn't say a word. So we just sit here. We don't say a word. Inside here there may be a lot of words going on in your head. In your knees, your knees may be saying lots of words like, "God damn it, this hurts so much, I don't know what in the world I'm doing," blah, blah. But we just sit here. There's a wonderful koan teaching story about this. You know this book? This is a great book. Andy Ferguson's book, Zen's Chinese Heritage. These are our ancestors. But not just Soto Zen, but all kinds. So this story is about Yaoshan and his teacher, Sherdo. One day as Yaoshan was sitting, Sherdo asked him, "What are you doing here?" Yaoshan said, "I'm not doing a thing." Sherdo said, "Then you're just sitting leisurely." Yaoshan said, "If I were sitting leisurely, I'd be doing something." Sherdo said, "You say you're not doing anything. What is it that you're not doing?" Yaoshan, "A thousand sages don't know." Sherdo wrote a verse of praise that said, "Long abiding together, not knowing its name, just going on practicing like this. Since ancient times, the sages don't know. Will searching everywhere now make it known?" Okay, "I'm not doing a thing. You're just sitting leisurely. If I were sitting leisurely, I'd be doing something." What is it that you're not doing? A thousand sages don't know. So the train goes by, and we just sit here, saying nothing. Just sit here. Norman Fisher asked years ago at a sesshin. He was the head of practice at Green Gulch, and his voice suddenly came out of the silence, and he said, "What in the world are you doing sitting there? What in the world are you doing sitting there? You think it's going to change the world? Do you think it helps? Do you think it's going to change you?" This came up last night. I think, you know, we often say, sit with no gaining idea. Just sit there and don't say a word. See what happens. And somebody brought up that maybe that's kind of discouraging for new people, that they come often out of great pain and they're looking for some kind of peace in their life or stress reduction or something like that. And I don't mean to be discouraging, and I say to you, don't sit for anything. Don't sit for anything. That's sitting for some thing, and it's, I think, in the long run, counterproductive. Just sit like that Buddha in Oakland and see what happens. The Buddha just sat there saying nothing, and look what happened. It's like, you know, the description is like a miracle. That, when I lived there, was a long time ago, in the 80s. But as I understand it, it's still a pretty tough neighborhood. Obviously, it's a tough neighborhood if people are doing drugs and peeing on the median. But the Buddha just sat there, not saying a word. Shikantaza, we call it. Just sitting, simply sitting. Not trying to get anywhere. Not concentrating on words. Not visualizing. Not even counting your breath. Just sitting there, not saying a word. Maybe you feel a little breeze on your cheek. You hear the air conditioning when it starts up. That train could have come through while we were sitting. Just sitting, not saying a word. And the words that we're not saying include the mind words that we say to ourselves when we start thinking. Right? They don't have to be said out loud. Not saying a thing. You know, apparently you read the Fukan Zazengi sometimes. You know, he says, think not thinking. How do you think not thinking? Non-thinking. So maybe Shikantaza is non-sitting, non-zazen. Maybe Yaoshan was doing non-zazen. Not falling off on the side of making some great effort to get something. Not falling off on the side of sitting leisurely. Shikantaza, simply sitting. What's it like? What's it like? You make an effort, right? We make a great effort, but the effort is to sit up straight. The effort is to honor that curve. The effort is to not say anything. To let go of the saying. Let go of the doing. Just keep letting go and letting go and letting go. I think that's zazen. It's all about opening this hand of thought, opening this hand of thought, opening, letting go, letting go, letting go. Or noticing your grasping, noticing your grasping, noticing your grasping. Ow, 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 ow. Ugh, oh. Hurts your stomach, hurts your jaw. Stopping it. So there is an effort. But it's not an effort in order to anything. Right? If you're not making some effort, I think that's sitting leisurely. That's what Yaoshan was saying, I believe. But we also need to sit with that sense of not a thousand sages know. In some way you know what you're doing. I'm sitting here, my legs are crossed, my knees are bent, I'm sitting in a chair, whatever it is. My feet are in some way in touch with the floor. My butt is on something or another. My breath is entering, filling, pause, leaving, pause, my body. I know that. And I know that when I do it, things happen. And I certainly know that when I don't do it, things don't go so well. I know. But I also know that if I sit in order to get peace, in order to get less stress, it doesn't work. A friend of mine once said years ago, that road leads to hell. we do sit with this. I think of it as zazen, as waiting in willingness. I'm willing to let go of my discursive thinking. I'm willing to notice my breath. I'm willing to pay attention to my posture. I'm willing to balance my head on my spine so that I don't cause myself a lot of back pain that I don't need to have. I'm willing to be present for what arises, be it pain in my knee, pain in my heart, joy in my heart, lust, whatever it might be. I'm willing to do that. I'm willing to be with it, not knowing just what it is. For me, I'm in the Enneagram system, I'm told that I'm a perfectionist. Actually, I am a perfectionist. I know that. And so I work with letting go of doing it just right. I let go of demanding an answer. That's why I say waiting and willingness to turn towards whatever arises and just be there with it. See what happens. Let it be an adventure. Maybe Yao Shan was talking about an adventure. Even 1,000 sages don't know. And yet we do know something. So how do you sit with that? How do you not sit leisurely, but also not sit, they didn't use the word, but not sit graspingly? Tygen Layton has a newer book out called Zen Questions, and he talks about sitting with a sense of inquiry, which maybe is just a slightly different emphasis way of talking about what I mean when I say sitting, waiting, and willingness. But he says that we have some question. It's in our nerves, in our bodies, some question like, what is this? What's going on here? What is it? So we sit with this. But if you fall over into demanding an answer or leaning into it, you can feel it in your body when there is a sense of urgency. Can't you? If you're quiet, you can feel it. I'm gonna rescue the world. I'm gonna do this. Or I have to. Maybe that's a giveaway too. I have to? Listen to that. I have to? I don't think so. A friend of mine at Tassajara used to say when she had that, the sense of urgency or leaning in or, anger, irritation would arise because somebody wasn't doing it right, she would say, I'm disqualified. And she would disqualify herself from saying to the person, we don't do it that way here or whatever it was, even though she might be right about what she was going to say. She realized when she felt that in herself, when she felt that irritation or urgency arising, she'd give it some breath and she'd just walk away because it wasn't for her to say it. And we can have that in our sazen. I have to know. Or somebody was telling me the other day, we had a one-day sitting and I was talking to somebody who was telling me that he had had a delightful experience of, he didn't use this word, but I will, of samadhi, of a deep concentration, a deep settling, a deep sense of not being a separate event from his experience. And then he spent the next 2 weeks trying to get back there. And that's what we do. That's what we do. So don't do it. It's easy for me to say that. So waiting in willingness a sense of inquiry. Not even 1,000 sages know what it is. So we, maybe one of the things Shikantaza is about is faith. Faith or trust or self-confidence that you just take that next breath, you know, straighten up, notice that you're slumping, notice that your chin is sticking out, whatever it might be, take that breath, straighten up, come back to your body, just sitting, waiting in willingness for whatever comes up. Sherto had given some wonderful instructions. I presume Yaoshan was there that day. Where is it? Oh, there was actually was talking to Yaoshan. Yaoshan was having a hard time. He said that he had just first gone to Sherto, and he said he had a general instruction. I want to find out about the southern teaching of pointing directly at mind, seeing self-nature and becoming a Buddha. I'm not clear about this teaching, and I asked for the master's compassionate instruction. So you can see this man was grasping right away. I want to know. Tell me how to do it. You have this teaching about the southern school, like about sudden enlightenment, whammo, you just sit down and boom. Amazing things happen. Burn all of your treatises and so on. That's what Dushan coming down south to teach these barbarians and winds up burning all of his treatises and sitting zazen. So Yaoshan had the same, been bitten that way. Okay. I want to find out about this teaching. I asked for the master's compassionate instruction, and Sherto said, you can't attain it this way. You can't attain it not this way. Trying to attain it this way or not this way, it can't be attained. Trying this way or not this way, it can't be attained. It's one of my mottos, is trying doesn't work. So what will you do? So you can't attain it this way, you can't attain it not this way. Trying to attain it this way or not this way, it can't be attained. So what will you do? Yaoshan was confused, and so Sherto sent him away for a while. But he wound up coming back. And then he was sitting, this was years later, and that's when Sherto asked him, what are you doing? And he said, I'm not doing a thing. So I think he'd learned something in those intervening years. I'm not sitting leisurely, but I'm not doing a thing. 1,000 sages don't know. So this Buddha statue just sat in Oakland. And things changed. They do that, you know. Things changed. You sit zazen, and things change. I forgot to ask. When are we supposed to stop?
We generally stop around 8:45.
Okay, so I want to leave some room, time for questions and so on. So, what I want to give you a sense of is that it really is a wonderful mystery. And you put a Buddha statue on a street, and look what happens. Now, I'm not saying, I don't think it's magic. And I don't know how much it has to do with the Buddha statue itself, the image of a Buddha, maybe it does. But we can use this to encourage us to just sit there and not say anything. Put the effort into the sitting there. Posture into letting go of the thoughts, into being willing to turn towards what does come up. Because sometimes resistance pain comes up in zazen. You may be familiar with this. Sometimes you have pain that's nerve pain, and you really should move, I think. Not moving is important, but there are times when you should move. And sometimes it's stretching out because you're relatively new to this or new posture or something. And sometimes it's resistance pain. Is there something you don't want to be with, so your knee decides to cooperate by distracting you, by hurting. And that may be a time when you should sit with it. Sit still for it. Make that effort to sit still for it. Don't start, I don't know if any of you are beginners, don't start there. Do not start there, because you can really hurt yourself. So I'm not talking about that. But as you get used to this posture and your body in this posture, then you begin to know what kind of pain it is. So you make that effort. And if you do move, you make the effort to keep having the zazen mind. In other words, so fine, if you need to move, move. You don't have to say to yourself, oh, I can never do this, I hate this, this is so stupid, I'm a failure, yada, yada, yada. Can you just do the little bow and make the little move and continue zazen? That's a big effort sometimes. Years ago, when I was at Tassajara, I don't remember what it was, I had hurt my knee or something, and there was a time when we would sit for an hour and 5 minutes straight, but there was a 5 minute interval in between. A little tiny bell would ring, and you could stand up at your seat, or you could change position, or you could go into resting posture for those 5 minutes. And I needed to do that. And so I had really worked during the practice period with being willing to move and to get up. I think I was standing up for those 5 minutes and then sitting down again. And I had really gotten to the point where I could do that and not lose my concentration and not go into some whole litany about what a failure I was. So practice period ends and work period starts and all these new people come. And we had that same kind of hour with an interval. And the little bell rang for the interval, and I just sat there. And I'm sitting there kind of laughing and kind of irritated with myself and saying to myself, this is ridiculous. You have to stand up. You're going to hurt yourself. This is just really stupid. And I couldn't do it. Because I was a senior person, and I was a regular monk at Tassajara, and I was not a beginner. Just watching that. But again, that's a willingness. You know, I wasn't able to move, but I was willing to really, really look at my ego, which was, I must say, in my face. And it took me, I don't know how many days, but it was more than one. I hope it wasn't more than 3 or 4, I don't really remember, but eventually I got to where I could get myself to stand up. So that's an effort, right? My effort was to be present for what was going on and to let go of that ego hoo-ha. So turning towards and being open to what is also the effort we make. It's just not to get something. Maybe it's to be something. And that's a word I like, is willingness. To be willing. I'm willing to sit still. I'm willing to move. I'm willing to face impermanence. And sometimes I'm not, and then I'm willing to turn back again. So how is it for you? And I have to tell you, I have to move. Because I've been sitting this way while we were sitting zazen, and it's enough. Let's see. I'm not sure. Let me just do this. Is this all right? I could do this for a little bit and see, because we're almost done. but I won't be stupid. So how is it for you? What does it mean to you to just sit there and not say anything? Yes, I'm sorry.
Uh-huh. And I always have a lot of trouble with the minimalist painting.
Chair? Yes, but I was hoping you would go on talking and somebody would silently bring me a chair because this is getting recorded and all that. Okay. I mean, when you say minimalist, you mean like a Rothko with just blocks of color or something?
It's a blank canvas.
No.
It's a blank canvas with one line on it. Or, you know, a spot, one circle of color or something like that.
Uh-huh.
I don't really remember the specific thing.
Right.
Uh-huh. You know, one line is a complete expression. And, thank you.
You're welcome. Yeah. Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Well, that's a great image. Right. That's right. One, two. Go ahead.
Uh-huh. It always comes up, and it always comes up from something immediate or something immediate that's attached to my past. And I see the recordings of my parents and my family still in my brain and the messages from my father that it's really mm-hmm. hard to cut the cord that, you know, that it doesn't serve me now.
Mm-hmm. You just stay with your body. Stay with the physical sensations. And when you're thinking, to see if you can... I have a friend who sometimes says, Gary McNabb told me once that he says, excuse me, when he's thinking. He says, excuse me, and then he just goes back to his breath and his body. So just say, excuse me, and notice, try to stay open, put your attention on the physical. What's going on in your gut? What's going on in your jaw? Whatever you carry, your fear or and your attention and whatever, just come back to your body and let go of the thinking, which is a lot of effort. It's not easy when it's ancient tangled karma that has a hold of you. Yeah.
So I was there last night.
Mm-hmm.
Thinking about it, and so I guess this isn't exactly a question, but it is.
Comments are acceptable.
I've been trying to sit with this, the reality of striving as being the cause of suffering, trying to get, and you know,
like trying to stop it.
I'm trying to get something. So sitting without trying to get anything is like an opening to another way, a little door opening or window to another way of being.
You could go make an offering to the 11th Avenue Buddha. I'm only sort of joking. I mean, you know, it wouldn't be a bad thing to do if you're there. If you go to that exhibit, for example, it's not that far. Go make an offering. And I say that, and I'm not joking. It's not that I think it's magic. But there's something in terms of letting go of striving and letting go of grasping. There's something really important about enacting our intention with our body. So doing something, that's one of the major purposes of ritual, I believe. Anyway, so doing it with your body. So make an offering, could bring a flower or something and say, I mean to let go of this. And you can say, please help me. What the hell? You know? And it can be useful. But this person that had this wonderful settling experience, we did a little exercise, actually, with something that I do with my teacher. My teacher is Sojourn Mel Weitzman, and Mel is a cutting through kind of person. And he'll tell me sometimes, just do it, or stop it, that kind of thing. And my internal experience is, what? I can't just do that. I have to, like, work on it. I have to do it. But when he says things like that, my practice is to just say yes. Yes. And not quibble with him. And that doing that, that enacting my, because it's good advice, it's just that I can't just drop it like that. It doesn't happen a lot of the time. So it's good advice. But it's not so easy. But my experience is that when I say that, yes, it deepens my intention to drop it or to do whatever it is, to not do or to do. So this person Saturday and I did that, you know, and I said, just drop it. Just drop striving after more of this experience. I said, just drop it. He said, yes. We'll see what happens. Because you may well still have to watch yourself, torture yourself for a while. So, oh well. I want to encourage you to bring up whatever you like. It's a gift to everybody when you will speak up, share your truth. Thanks. Yeah. Mm-hmm. How can you say more? I let go, not all the time. Yeah, well, we'd have to talk about it, and I'd have to know you better. So I don't know. But sometimes we can give up in a way that's sitting leisurely, you know? And because there is effort and there is discipline. It's just not to get or in order to. It isn't any of those things. Or it often is, and then we have to see that and let it go, like this person was, you know, he was causing himself suffering. And I've been there. So maybe it's something for you to explore, you know, gently, kindly, generously, all those things, you know, that in the four Brahma Viharas, right, the first one is loving kindness, and you start with this one. You're not very helpful to anybody if you don't start right here. So I encourage you, and to hear all these people. They're here to support you. So I know for me, one of the ways that I get myself on the cushion is that I started a Zen center. You know, I say that I'll be there, right? And then I feel like I have to be there because I said I would, and that supports other people. And then they say, there are people that have said, I will be there every Tuesday and Thursday morning, and I will be the Doan on Thursday morning and the Kokyo on Tuesday, or I will be the Doan on Wednesday morning, or whatever. So they've put themselves in the position where they kind of have to be there. And that's a great way to get yourself into sitting, into the habit of sitting, is to make some commitment to be present. But also to know, you guys, you sit together, it matters for each one of you, each one of us, whether we're here or not. Right? If there's some critical mass, if there were four people here, it would feel pretty discouraging for those four people. So that it matters whether you come or not. It doesn't mean you can't miss occasionally or whatever, but it does, it matters. And sometimes I think that we think, oh, it doesn't matter if I'm there. Well, it does matter profoundly to you, but we can't always see that. So there's just these practical things. But the most important thing, I think, is for you to explore it. See what's up, and what is there something, is there something holding you back? Yeah.
I think Linda has a lot of wisdom, and I remember those two words when I'm sitting at home, or wherever in life, to not always rush in, and to just, here we are, just this. So there's a wealth of wisdom here. Thank you for that.
Yay. Yeah. Oh.
For me, sitting is, yes, ma'am. For me, sitting is sometimes, I tend to not think about what I'm going to get, but to think about how I'm going to get through it.
Yeah.
It takes a bit of mental discipline to settle back into right here, right now.
Yes, and sometimes we fail, and then we grit our teeth and just get through it. One time somebody at Tassajara asked Mel about that. He said, you know, what about, is that zazen when, you know, when you're just gritting your teeth and getting through the period? And Mel said, like it, don't like it, doesn't matter, damn, just sit down. But you know, gritting your teeth and getting through it, and maybe, you know, like counting or doing something or another to entertain yourself for the last 10 minutes, is that's the hell realm. So you watch yourself do that enough, and then maybe you'll stop because you get tired of it. That's right. That's right. And it supports us, and you'll find you can feel it. I don't know if you've ever come into a sesshin that's already started. You come in, say, the third day of a 7-day sit, and you can really feel the settledness. And you settle much faster than you would have, than you would otherwise. It's a physical experience that's profound, and it's real. It's just obvious. It's just, you can feel it in your body. There was something you're saying. Oh, when it's really hard in zazen, and it's it's usually in a sesshin or whatever. Sometimes it's useful to call for help, and I don't mean jump up and say hey, but there's a kind of surrender, a kind of calling for help. I call on Prajnaparamita myself, and you, whatever does it for you. You can call on the 11th Avenue Buddha if you want. But just there's a kind of giving up and saying, just to the universe, please, please help me. And if you really mean it, there's help there. We say inquiry and response come up together. The song of the jewel mirrors samadhi. But the trouble is that you have to mean it. And we you can say it, and if you don't mean it, nothing happens. You understand what I'm saying? There's a I'll tell you really quickly, and then you'll be the last question. Years ago, I was sitting a short retreat with Joko Beck, and I was sitting beside somebody who was crying the whole time. And I found it really irritating. And she was crying and snuffling. And I'm sitting there saying to myself, I should have a calm mind. I should be nice. I should be compassionate. I should this, that, and the other thing. And I was totally irritated and distracted by this person. And that night, as I was eating my dinner, the thought arose, well, I don't have calm mind, I have irritated mind. And it just dropped away. Because I completely accepted what is. I completely accepted my irritated mind. That was amazing. However, I tried it again the next time I was in a sesshin. I thought, okay, I don't have the... Well, that was just a totally a brain event. And it didn't work. I tried to legislate it, it didn't work. So you have to mean it if you call for help. But yeah, you call for help, it doesn't hurt. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And that's good because it seems like that's mostly the time that I have. Uh-huh. But at what point, I guess the value of coming here is you can't really just go take a nap, but there's just trying to understand what the value is and struggling so much to stay awake.
Because that's what we're doing. struggling to stay awake because we distract ourselves with computers and murder mysteries and ice cream cones and you name it, in order to not be awake. Yeah, I think we're afraid to be awake. And one of the things we do is sleep. So there, I don't have any magic about it, getting sleep, getting exercise, doing a little stretching before you start, but keeping your eyes wider open sometimes helps. But mostly you just keep, you'll work it through and then you'll stop, probably. It's so uncomfortable to fall asleep. You know, you fall forward, that's a good motivator to stop it. Just come back to your body. Your body. We should stop. I think we're already way over. Thank you.